Hello there, and welcome to Connections on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, Bill Newell. I think Josh Arnold will be joining us. Haven't heard anything about that, but hopefully he will. And we've got another eclectic show lined up here this morning. This is a news magazine that we try to put out every Tuesday and Thursday at 10. It's 11 today, I know. And, you know, basically focusing on the North Shore with North Shore interviews, but also trying to get news interviews and other features out that relate to people who live in the area. Bill, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Rick?
Doing good, doing good. This spring weather has got everybody feeling good, I guess. Little departure from the weather I had on Friday when I went skiing. It was 3 degrees, and it was perfect. But I guess it's in the mid-50s right now.
Yeah, something like that, right around there. Yeah, high around 50 today. Yeah, as far as the program, Rick, I mean, we're trying to have people, local people, talk about issues of the day, and I think it's great for people to that don't get a chance to hear who these people are and hear from them, that there's so much talent on the North Shore, and I feel like we're presenting it to people in the program. And today we have Paul Layton, writer for the Salem News, who covers Beverly, so we'll talk Beverly for sure. And we also have Jim Walsh, who is the Democratic chairman for the party in Nahant, has been around politics for a long time, and he is incredibly articulate. He'll be coming up in the second part of the program today.
Right, I'm glad you mentioned the fact that we tried to get there is so much talent on the North Shore. And, you know, one of the things we want to do is have people talk in their own voices. And I think that the more we get that word out there, the more we'll be able to get out there on top of that. And, you know, we want to go to the source. We want to get the experts on here instead of the rumorville and, you know, and talking over the fence type thing. Although that's fun, too. So we hope that people will email us at msonewsports@gmail.com and give us their suggestions maybe as to who we might have on or topics or that kind of thing. Bill, I want to mention – go ahead.
Rick, I was going to have you – I wanted you to talk about the something unusual. In fact, I hit upon this yesterday. I was looking for a town website. Mm-hmm. It did not work. I did not understand why until I checked out MSO News Sports today and found out why the – town websites were not working.
There you go. And to give credit where it is due, it actually I got this from Jim Sullivan in the Gloucester Times, and I was looking for some contacts in Methuen. I'm trying to get a hold of people up there in Methuen, maybe the mayor, maybe some city councilors. They're not responding because of all the crazy things that are happening up there. But the Methuen website, I couldn't connect either. In fact, it just said, you know, the Josh just arrived. The site was down anyway, and I thought it was something to do with my computer, because you know how sometimes your local Wi-Fi doesn't connect or your local computer doesn't connect, so you reboot. So I kept rebooting, and I kept going back, and I couldn't connect on anything from the Methuen website. And then come to find out, there's a service that Methuen has. What's the name of that service? It's Civic Plus, according to Jim Sullivan, and it also it was down. So the Methuen website was completely down. They had to postpone their meetings because of the open meeting laws, which is in our newscast. But also, it affected Rockport, Essex, Newbury, and Salisbury. So the dependence on technology, it really hit home yesterday. And at least it wasn't my fault for a change.
Well, that's good to know.
So, yeah.
So interesting stuff. So, no, I think that it did impact a lot of, you know, town websites for different things in the area. So. All right, so we found that one out. The other thing I thought we could do, Rick, is just talk about, just spring something on you guys we want to do things like, you know, what do people listen to? What do they watch? What are they interested in? What do they read down the road? That's not a whole program, but just here and there. And I thought television. So what are some TV shows that you watch every single week?
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what.
Keep it to two or three.
Okay, well, sports, obviously.
I watch Blue Bloods.
I do watch Blue Bloods. We're in season 8 or 9. I had to buy 8 and 9 because they took, we're in season 8 or 9.
Oh.
Because, we started binge watching a year ago and they took 8 and 9 off of Netflix and so we had to buy it. Let me see here. I'll check.
Channel 351 on certain days and channel 11.
I don't know what that is, 351.
351 runs Blue Bloods for the back seasons, and channel 11 locally. Plus is in season 8 now.
Well, I don't know what channels those are, okay. But I do watch Blue Bloods. Anyway, Bill, the other thing is I will check in on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News. I do check those daily. And local news. I prefer Channel 5 because of the Mike Lynch connection.
Yeah. I mean, all those. I tend to watch a lot of comedies and stuff, if not watching the news or sports or something like that. A web show that I always like to check out to see what is on is Channel 5 Chronicle, which is at 7:30.
Right.
Which takes you all around New England. I got to meet Ted Reinstein a couple of times, one of the correspondents for that show. He's got a couple of great books out on New England. And he spoke at the Marblehead Library a couple of times. And actually we have a post up on our website. You could Google him on our website and the speech that he made now a couple of years ago, I think now. But anyways, that's one that I watch. So like I said, the comedies. Another one I love to watch is Impractical Jokers. Do you guys watch that?
No.
Occasionally.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
I love that show.
It's Fox on the, when you're clicking.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. You could watch it for a few minutes. Watch it. You could binge watch it, too, if you wanted to, I suppose. Because people binge watch nowadays.
Well, yes, we do.
There's a term we didn't have years ago. You were not binge watching years ago.
Well, you know, years ago we had Candid Camera, and there were lots of things that you see similar to the practical jokes now. The practical jokes is the modern version of Candid Camera.
Hey, I want to mention one thing. You mentioned Candid Camera. We put up a couple of Candid Cameras as our video of the day on North Shore Today. There's one up from yesterday. But there's a great video on our North Shore Today post. It's called Target Husband Shoppers, and it's fantastic. It's only like 4 minutes long, but it's about husbands whose wives go shopping at Target, I think they call it viral during this season, the flu season here. They call it a viral.
There you go.
But no, it's all over the place. I think it's all over the place, but it's a fantastic video. You've got to check it out. It's on the bottom of today's North Shore Today post.
Have to do that. You know, I forgot the most important show that we watch regularly, and that's Jeopardy. We tape it, watch it every night.
There you go.
Did you? Right.
Did you get the Adam Schiff question right?
Adam Schiff question?
Yeah, they had about a month ago. They put a question up, and it was the Adam and with all the final. Nobody could put a picture of Adam Schiff. Described what he did in Congress. Nobody heard of him.
Well, that shows to go here, I guess, right? Oh my
goodness! That was amazing because it was right during the impeachment stuff. Crazy, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable, yeah.
All right, Bill. So the other thing is we have sports. Coverage here. I'll be in Stoneham tonight. I'm going to be covering Gloucester-Wakefield hockey. And where will you be?
I will be at Hamilton-Wenham tonight. Swampscott, Hamilton-Wenham boys basketball. That should be interesting. I looked at maybe going to a hockey game too, but I said, I'll just go to the basketball.
There you go.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You know? So, well, old friend Craig Genualdo up there at Hamilton-Wenham and, of course, the two coaches. But, by the way, we hope to talk. We may be doing some basketball coaches. Speaking of the tournament, we have a post up on the Lynn English win last night, but two big Cape Ann League wins for North Reading and Newburyport, a huge one for Newburyport last night. So we'll talk about, maybe we'll have more information on that later today on Newburyport. But anyways,
right.
We got all the scores up on the post, and we'll later on put up the schedule for today. It's actually on our website now, but a lot of things happening with the tournament in basketball and hockey.
All right. Tim and I talked to five hockey coaches, area hockey coaches, last night, and that's also up on our website under North Shore Sports Night. All right, Bill, we'll check in with you after we listen to Jim Walsh.
And Paul 8 coming up next.
You got it. All right. Thanks, Bill. That is Bill Newell, and Josh is here. You're back.
I'm here.
All right. You do like to make an entrance. Okay. all right, we'll take a break, and then when we come back, we will be checking in with Paul Layton as Bill talks to the Salem News Reporter. This is Connections here on MSO, newsports.com.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more.
We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of summer all year round at Cherry Farm Creamery. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com. Catch the big names in North Shore news and sports on MSO News Sports Podcast. The North Shore's podcast leader for both news and sports features. Connecting you to the North Shore. Paul Layton of the Salem News is joining us. And, Paul, welcome. Good to be talking with you again.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Good talking with you here today. And, Paul, I know you've been off a little bit for a week or so here previous weeks, but back now after battling what a lot of folks have had a bunch of illnesses here in the wintertime. But great to have you back.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Feeling much better now, and that I'm now, as we do this, I'm walking around in the sun outside our office, so feeling much better.
You got it. All right. Well, Paul covers Beverly for the Salem News, among other things, but a lot of Beverly stuff, and Paul, I guess I want to begin with, you know, since we last talked, you know, another apartment complex has been approved for Rantoul Street, and share with us the information on that.
Sure. It's a building that's called Depot Square 2. It's the latest building by a developer who's built a lot of apartment buildings over the years on Rantoul Street near the train station. That's why it's such an attractive spot where, you know, people like to have that easy access into Boston. So this would be another 6- and 7-story building with, I think it's 115 apartments and retail space on the first floor, which is sort of the same format they've used for all these other buildings. It was pretty controversial because, well, some people were opposed to having another large building in the same area, and it was also, they have to knock down a couple of historic buildings to make way for it. And some people were upset about losing the history down by the train station. These buildings that used to be hotels, and one was a carriage house, you know, associated with transportation in the area. So it was pretty controversial. There were a lot of hearings over a few months, but ultimately it got passed, and I believe construction's going to begin sometime this spring.
And again, those are buildings, right, Paul, that would have obviously apartments and residential pieces to them, but also first floor commercial space. Does that sound right?
Yeah. And that's been the way that just about all of these buildings have gone. So that, you know, the idea is you have the housing on the upper floors, but then you have all these, you know, a built-in customer base too, and you have retail on the first floor, and it's really, I think we talked about before, transform that area of Rantoul Street. You know, some people like it, some people don't, but it is, there is a lot of new construction. There's a new vibrancy on the street. If you go down there at night, there are restaurants that people go to. So it really has changed that part of Beverly. The ongoing question, like a lot of community spaces, you know, how much is too much? And that's something that Beverly will continue to debate as they move forward.
I got you. You know, it's something, Paul, that I was thinking of, and I know that you've kind of touched on this as well with your work in Beverly, is that, you know, cities have, you know, they have a height limit on buildings. And part of that, or all of it, is really based on what the fire department in that city can deal with. And there was a fire recently in one of these apartments in Beverly, and maybe share some information on that piece and what the thinking is in Beverly as regarding as how high to build, and then also having the fire department able to battle fires of buildings that are, you know, more than just 2 or 3 stories.
Right. That's one of the issues that has come up. And the limit is basically 6 floors. I think it can be 7 floors, you know, depending on how it's built. But there was a fire over the weekend at a building called the Millery, which is actually one of these apartment buildings that's been up for, you know, a couple of decades in Beverly. So it's not one of the newer ones, but it's in the same area. And Luckily, everybody got out fine. Nobody was hurt. A couple of people were displaced for a couple of days because of water and smoke damage. And this fire was on the third floor of this particular seven-story building. But I spoke with the fire chief afterwards, and it's a subject I actually brought up that he didn't bring up. But it's he said that they've had to adjust over the last 10 years or so because there are, what, about six or seven or more of these taller buildings on Rantoul Street. And, of course, in the context of major cities like Boston and New York City, it seems like no big deal. But the fire department needs a certain amount of manpower, certain types of equipment, certain types of training once you're getting up, in these taller buildings. So that's something that they're looking at closely. The fire chief said that they're talking with the mayor about getting another ladder truck, which, costs more than $1 million. And he said they have to really train on this in order to, devise the right tactics in terms of getting up to these higher floors in these buildings.
Interesting stuff. But for right now, if I lived on the seventh floor, Paul, I'd have a couple of fire extinguishers in my apartment, I think,
yes, I'd advise that, Bill.
All right. Paul, since we last talked, I know there was a story regarding Beverly's schools and Beverly All-Day Kindergarten and the fees associated with All-Day K, if you will, as it's referred to. And Beverly has removed the fees, and that was much heralded by a lot of the leaders in Peabody.
Yeah, it's something that the people in Beverly have been looking at for a long time, because Beverly was, for quite a long time, one of the few remaining cities or towns that still charged for full-day kindergarten. At one point, it was $4,000 a year, and it had lately gone down to $2,100, but finally the school committee a few weeks ago voted to eliminate that fee. It was just a matter of finding ways to account for that money, to make up for that money in the budget, and there were also issues of space in terms of where you can put all these kids in full-day kindergarten. One thing that benefited Beverly was they opened the new middle school a couple of years ago, and fifth graders now go to the new middle school, so that opened space in all the elementary schools, and now there are more. There's more room for each of these elementary schools to have a full-day kindergarten class. So I know a lot of parents were happy to hear that, because that's especially when it was up to $4,000, that's quite a hit that families were taking when the kids are pretty young, never mind trying to think ahead to their college days. So that was really a big that was a big change in the city that I think people were grateful for.
I may be springing this one on you, Paul, but I'm trying to think now. Not everyone will do all day K, though, right? Some will still do the half day. Does that sound right, or will everybody?
How does that work?
Right. No, you still have the option of the half-day kindergarten, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the superintendent had said that, that most people now do want full-day kindergarten. A lot of it has to do with, obviously, both parents are working, and it's hard, they need a place for the kids to be
right
all day. I know the half-day kindergarten, it starts at 8 o'clock, because my oldest daughter did it years ago, and they would be out by, I think it was 10:35, the half day is over, so it goes pretty quickly. And the state, state law is that cities and towns must provide free half-day kindergarten, but they do have the option to charge for the full day. But like I said, the trend has been overwhelmingly to try to provide the free full day, and now Beverly is in that group.
Exactly right. And for those listeners not totally familiar with that piece, I know the state piloted it probably over a decade ago, I think, with different communities and so on. And you're right. So that's the update on Beverly and full-day kindergarten moving forward in the city. Paul, maybe just a couple of other notes here. We talked about the fire department and the police department with that tiny little police station next to City Hall, if I have that right. The construction has started on the new police station at the Cummings Center?
Yes, exactly. It started a few weeks ago. If you can drive by, you can see the work underway. And this is a $24 million station that's planned. And this is something else that's been in the work I mean, for decades. As you said, the current station is next to City Hall, downtown on Cabot Street. It's actually an annex to the old City Hall building. It's almost 100 years old. I mean, it's woefully short on space, and you know, police and a lot of other people in the community have been advocating for a new station for years. And Beverly, over the last decade or so, has put the emphasis on building new schools. You know, they renovated all of the new the elementary schools. They built a new high school. They recently built a new middle school. And the promise always was that the police station would be next. It took a long time, but now it's finally happening.
You know, it's funny, you know, I'm not a youngster anymore, Paul, but my old city where I grew up, you know, they had the old police station that reminds me of where Beverly Police is now, but it almost seemed like it was bigger than that one years ago. And then they moved to another one. I don't know if I was still living in the area then or not, but they now have a third one. They have a newer one after that. So, I mean, so that speaks to the need for a new police station for Beverly, as noted here.
Yes, because, you know, some of the departments, you know, within the police department have been located at different sites throughout the city for years. The detectives are in a different location, and I think that the domestic violence unit is located in different locations. You know, not even in the same buildings, they're spread throughout the city. So now they're going to all obviously be able to be in the same building. And I think that'll be huge for the department.
Oh, that makes sense. That now it makes more sense. Now I get you. Okay, thank you. Hey, Paul. Finally, just you know, I know we talked with the retiring Beverly City Clerk, you know, maybe a month or so ago, and now you did a story on the new the search is on for a new director at the Beverly Library as the director there is retiring in April. So. Couple of big spots or positions to be filled in the city of Beverly in the weeks and months ahead.
Yes, and with the library, they're down to two finalists. One is the current assistant director. The other is now is the current librarian at the Rockport Library. So they're the two finalists, and they'll be interviewed, and then a selection will be made. The current librarian, Anna Langstaff, has been there for 35 years. The last 4 or 5 is the head librarian, but she's been there a long time, so people know her really well. The library just made a pretty big move, too, in the last couple of weeks where they've eliminated fines for overdue books. Again, this is something that a lot of other cities and towns have done. I guess it's been shown that the fines weren't that necessary, you know, weren't necessarily effective in terms of getting people to bring things back on time, and they might have also even discouraged people from using the library in the first place. So that's something that I think people will be happy to hear. No fines.
But you know, it's funny, Paul, you know, in my library, you know, see, people have been very forgiving on fines for the most part. You know, like I had a fine, I paid it, but you know, if you don't have the money that day because you're walking around and you walk into the library, you have no money with you, that, you know, you have your phone but no money, you know, they've been very, very forgiving, you know, but you're right. My library just did the same thing too. Yeah.
They did. Okay. Yeah. No, I would always feel very guilty if I was returning a book and it was overdue.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if there's something about it, but it's, they said it can be tough for, you know, younger families and families of lower incomes, and they have lots of kids, and you know how, when you have young kids and you can easily, lose track of these things. So it seems like a good move. It didn't account for a ton of money in their budget anyway.
Yeah, I know.
So I think they decided that it was, you know, that everybody was just better off if there were no fines.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a regular guy like you or myself, Paul, and you're running up thousands of dollars of annual library fines, there's something wrong with you, I think. You
yeah.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah, we're both on the run from the last one.
And they're not making a lot of money, you're right, on that piece. But that's good to know. Yeah, so we got that piece. Well, Paul, anything else to share with us here before we let you go here on a busy day?
I'm trying to think. The only other story I did recently was that the governor has made this proposal to limit access to birth certificates and marriage certificates. You know how you might run down to City Hall and look up something, you know, from the ancestors and so forth. And I just did the story because there's this gentleman at Beverly City Hall. He's 90 years old, Dan Driscoll. He's retired from the United Shoe. And for the last 20 years or so, he's been helping people with genealogy research, looking into their family's background. And I did a story on how this rule, if it goes through, it hasn't been passed yet, might affect him. Does that mean that he would not be able to access these records anymore? Seems like it's kind of up in the air. I don't think the intent of it, the intent of it was to protect the privacy of people. Right now, which I guess I didn't really know, I could go in and ask for your birth certificate, parent certificate. Anybody can ask for anybody's. And so there's an effort to sort of tighten things up with the emphasis on privacy and with records coming online. So that's sort of up in the air, but it was kind of nice to talk to this gentleman, Mr. Driscoll, who's been doing this on a volunteer basis for 20 years and helping a lot of people, research their family history at City Hall.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's certain things that with the privacy laws and so on, no one can talk to anybody, if you have a college student, Paul, you can't get a grade on your son or daughter at college,
right?
You know, stuff like that. I mean, I remember I was did the interview with Les Slate, the retiring city clerk, and down there, and I know a mom was coming up to get a birth certificate for her, a marriage certificate for her daughter. I was just sitting there, and I was being probably very nosy, but you can't ignore that if you're just sitting on the bench outside the city clerk's office.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're not really, no one would say anything that was private anyways, basically. But you know, she was just getting a marriage certificate because I think of the it had to do with a name change kind of a thing, and you know, there was something, I forgot what the reasoning was, but all these things, you need certain certificates now to prove certain things, like for more, if you want to go buy a house, that's what it was, I think, your name has changed and you need to prove it, you know what I mean? So so if it goes on a mortgage, you know, your legal name and so on has to be accurate and so on, so all those things, people will save, your daughter is working, so you go in and see if you can pick that up. But now, with that law, you're right, that could change. It makes it a little more difficult for the honest people, I guess, yeah.
Right. Well, one reason people came in, which I didn't really think about, that Dan told me, is that, somebody goes to see their doctor, and their doctor asks about, their medical history in their family. And he said people have come in and say, oh, I want to see my grandfather's death certificate to see what he died of, because my doctor wants to know what the history is in the family. Mm. I never really thought of that for a reason. So there are a lot of different reasons that people would come in and want to access these records. So it's going to be a question going forward, who gets access and how difficult it might be for other people. You can always go in and get your own birth certificate and marriage certificate. The question is, who else should have access?
Exactly. And, I know that another piece to this is a lot of folks, my wife's father, my wife's father needed to, to get a driver's license. You're talking somebody over 80 years old needs to bring their birth certificate to the Department of Motor Vehicles for their driver's license to get renewed. And so, you know what I mean?
Right.
So she, I know she had to go down to the city hall to get that piece. But, so you put all these laws in, and then you put more laws in, and it makes it even harder for folks to do all that stuff. So it's crazy, but I guess there's a reason for it,
Yeah, it all comes down to privacy in this case, but you always, you need to balance, the privacy concerns with, the public's right to these records. So, like I said, that's going to be the question about this, this proposed change.
Well, we know Beverly's in good hands, Paul, with you on the scene there and keeping track of things with the Salem News. But, Paul, always great talking with you. Glad you're feeling better. And, after the illness and so on. But we'll talk again soon, I hope.
Okay. That's great, Bill. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Very good. Paul Layton, writer for the Salem News, and covers obviously in the paper as well as some other information as well. Paul Layton from the Salem News with us here on MSONewsSports.com.
All righty. Thank you, gentlemen. Still to come, we will be actually, Bill will be checking in with the Nahant Democratic Chair, Jim Walsh, in just a minute, and Josh is going to pay attention to that because I believe they're going to be evoking Kennedy, which is Josh's favorite subject. After that, we'll kick it around a little bit following that, and I'm trying to think here if that's it. Again, we've got sports coverage tonight, of course, the MIAA tournament. Bill will be covering basketball. I'll be covering some hockey, and that's we'll have those posts up later on this evening. But in the meantime, well, you need to do some business here, and then we'll come back with Bill. Bill Newell and Jim Walsh. So please stay with us. And again, any suggestions, comments, complaints, whatever, please send them along to msonewsports@gmail.com. Thank you. This is Connections here on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold, Bill Newell, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender. Jim Walsh from Nahant is joining us. He is the chairman of the Town Democratic Committee, and Jim, welcome. Good to be talking with you.
Thank you, Bill.
Hey, this past weekend, cities and towns around the North Shore had their Democratic caucuses, and I'm sure people can get confused with this if they're not all the insiders like yourself, but what's the difference between what happened in Massachusetts this past weekend and what happened in Nevada on Saturday and Iowa a couple of weeks ago as far as caucusing?
Sure. Well, every year there are caucuses for Democratic town committees and members of the Democratic town committee, Democratic party throughout the state. So we get together once a year and we elect delegates to a state Democratic convention, which is held once a year. Every other year, the convention either discusses just topics of interest and policies and things of that sort, and in the following year they nominate candidates for statewide office. This year we will be nominating, for instance, a nominee for senator between Mr. Markey and Mr. Kennedy. We can talk about that later if you'd like. But the national caucuses are presidential caucuses. They are about a specific candidate. That's conventions and the caucuses that we hold.
Jim, as far as apportioning, sending our delegates to the national convention, which would be in Wisconsin this year, that would then happen at the state convention? Does that sound right?
No. Nope. That will happen as a result of the primary to be held this March 3rd. There will be a statewide presidential primary in which all the candidates will appear nationally, and the candidates will get the proportion of the vote that they receive will indicate the number of delegates they get in Massachusetts.
Yeah, I got that, but I'm wondering, as for the actual individuals that head out to Wisconsin, how is that determined then?
Yes, well, they will be elected. Each candidate has its committee, its representatives who will be essentially on the ballot.
Gotcha. Okay, that clears it up. All right, thank you. I knew one answer. I didn't know them all, you know. All right. Jim Walsh is with us. We're talking about some politics. I'm going to hold off Super Tuesday, even though we probably should be talking about that first, but that's just coming up next week. But tell me about the race, which is a fascinating race for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate, where incumbent Senator Ed Markey is being challenged by Joe Kennedy III, the congressman from Metro West or whatever, Boston Metro West area. And I understand you're a Markey supporter, but tell us how you see that playing out. What are you hearing from fellow Democrats as far as that race is concerned?
Well, it's funny. You tend to talk with people who agree with you. So maybe I don't have a good sense of exactly where the race stands. But I know I also have friends who are Kennedy supporters, but not very many. The problem with that is that most of us feel that the most important thing that we have to do right now is to defeat Donald Trump. And myself, for instance, I work with a group called Swing Left, which is has a website, swingleft.org, I think, or .com. And what that organization does is use local Democrats in a blue state to support Democratic activities in swing states like Maine and Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, and places like that. So I feel, and I think most Democrats feel, the most important thing we have to do is contribute our time, money, and energy to defeating Donald Trump. Mr. Kennedy does not offer any substantive differences between himself and Mr. Markey on policy terms. He is a bright young guy. He's been a great congressman. But what he has done now is he has taken time, effort, and resources away from the fight that we should be working together to defeat Donald Trump. So that's the main problem most of us have with Mr. Kennedy's candidacy. Mr. Markey has a good, strong, progressive record, and there's no reason that I can see why I would try to get rid of him and his and the seniority that he has. He's on the Transportation Committee, for instance. Our metropolitan Boston area is in dire need of tremendous investment in changing the way we travel and also in protecting those methods, trains, roads, bridges, from climate change, the effects of climate change, as they become ever more apparent. So I'm supporting Mr. Markey because he has a good record. If Mr. Kennedy is the candidate, then I will support him. But I do not suspect that he will be.
Yeah. So now we go on to Super Tuesday, and that's the big one. The 12 states, I believe it is, and 14 entities altogether battling it out on Tuesday, March 3rd. Massachusetts, of course, one of those states. Jim, I saw a poll, I think it came out last Friday, that saw Sanders leading Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts 21-20. So obviously right within the margin of error. But what it tells me is that there's and I've looked at some of these other Real Clear Politics, and you know, you have Bernie Sanders leading, you might have Joe Biden leading in some, but not by big margin, take all races, as I understand it. That, you know, I was thinking we might have something proven on Super Tuesday, but I'm thinking now that that Sanders would be lucky to really get a quarter of the delegates coming out of Super Tuesday, and that's not enough to get over that 50% threshold, at least at this point.
Well, it's, of course, prognostication is not a science. Who knows what's going to happen? So many things can, events can interfere with what we think is going to happen. But I would say that it's most likely that we will have a brokered convention, that no one will walk into that convention with all the with enough votes to win a majority. And then there will be a lot of horse trading that goes on. Super Tuesday will certainly give a sense of who has broad support across regional and ethnic and different kinds of measures, but I don't think it will be decisive for anyone. I could be wrong on that. The issues that Mr. Sanders advocates for are tremendously important, and I support most of them, the issues. The answers that he presents, I have some problems with. One of the things that is problematic across this whole discussion is an inability of candidates to say, look, here is my idea. I would like to do this, but I know that I will have to bring that idea to the Congress of the United States, that there will have to be legislation, that there will have to be a budget. Therefore, I will advocate that idea, not that it's going to happen, but that I will try to make it happen, that I will work in that direction. I'm always reminded of President Kennedy when he announced the space program. He didn't say, I'm going to go to the moon and bring a guy back. He said, I am going to take legislation to the Congress of the United States and advocate for that position, which is the Democratic way. the small d democratic way. So it's something that we all have to do, and I wish more candidates would present their ideas in that context.
Gotcha. Let me ask you this, Jim. If Bernie Sanders arrives in Milwaukee with a plurality of the votes, not over 50%, but the most delegates, if you will, does that mean that he should get the nomination as far as you're concerned as a Elizabeth Warren supporter or one of the other supporters by that time? What do you think should happen at the convention?
Well, I think that there are a variety of things to look at, and one of them is the best understanding that we can bring to who would be the best candidate, the candidate who would defeat Donald Trump. Now, it may be clear by that time that Bernie is the person that can do that. If so, I will support Bernie, no problem at all. But that case, and there's a reason that Donald Trump will run a campaign that will be filled with lies and distortions. And for some reason, Bernie is more susceptible to those. So he'll be called a communist, he'll be called everything. He'll say he went to his honeymoon in Moscow, he loves Fidel Castro. And it'll be disinformation that sometimes is hard to respond to. So I'm not sure if Bernie would be the best candidate. I like the New York Times position on the Democratic candidate, too. He won Elizabeth and Amy Klobuchar. I would love that duo to be our leaders, but I don't think that's going to happen either.
Mm-hmm. As for Super Tuesday, other than looking at the Massachusetts vote, is there a particular state that you're kind of keeping an eye on as far? I mean, there are a couple of big states, obviously, California, Texas, and so on. But is there something that you kind of will be watching on Tuesday?
Well, I'm sort of against Super Tuesday in a way, because there are too many states involved and it's too expensive to run campaigns in all those states for people who may not be a billionaire or have tremendous resources. But I would look across the country, and across the country being the Middle West. I want to see what happens in Wisconsin and Michigan. I want to see what California, Texas, but also the Northwest as well, and some of the eastern states as well, just to look for a balance across the country, because that will help inform the Democratic delegates to the National Convention, who will ultimately have to make a decision as to who the nominee will be, because I don't think anyone will get a majority.
Gotcha. Okay. So we're talking with Jim Walsh, who is the chairman of the Democratic Party in Nahant. And Jim, any other thoughts on this presidential race, if you will? Let me ask you one last thing, and then you can close it out with your final comments. But what are you looking for in tonight's debate? There's a debate in South Carolina. You mentioned a billionaire. You might be referring to Michael Bloomberg, but he's not on the ballot Saturday in South Carolina. That's where the debate is. But are you looking for the rest of the candidates to really go at Bernie Sanders tonight?
Unfortunately, I think that's probably true, and they'll also go after Bloomberg. And again, I wish we could have a more reasonable discussion. But the way politics are done now, we don't look for details, we don't look for nuance, we don't look for ideas, we look for accusations and insults and tweets and stuff like that. But tonight, Bloomberg will be the more interesting person. If he is not a strong presence tonight, doing better than he did last time, then that would be very problematic for his campaign. On the other hand, I expect that he will do much, much better tonight than he did last week, and that may strengthen him. And the wonderful thing that Bloomberg has done is he has run a national campaign while everybody else was focused on just two states. While everybody was in Iowa and New Hampshire, Bloomberg was running ads and essentially competing in all the states that Donald Trump is competing in right now, every state of the union. So that is a very big contribution that Bloomberg has made, no matter what.
Well, you know, as I think back to one of my earlier questions, Jim, I think one of the interesting things to watch Tuesday will be to see what number Bloomberg gets, because he's doing all the national advertising, as you point out, targeted for Super Tuesday. Well, and nationally as well, as you said. But it'll be interesting to see how high he can bump up, you know, his vote percentages on Tuesday.
I agree.
Yeah. All right, Jim, anything else to share with us here?
Well, I'll tell you, when I think about, I'm an older American, and I grew up at a time when the political system produced the ability for someone like me, who was a working class kid, to go to get a state college education, which I loved, and I was able to get it for $50 a semester, $100 a year. Somehow, I think we have to find a way to look at the way we treat our young people and see the kind of investment that we have to make in them. I think the $400 that it cost me in tuition has been repaid in taxes and every other way by me and throughout my working life. I wish we could be at a position, in a position where Democrats and Republicans come together, figure out reasonable responses to obvious problems, and then work together from their different points of view.
Jim, great insights, fantastic insights, actually. And we'll be watching the debate carefully, I guess, tonight, and also all the results on this weekend from South Carolina, as well as Super Tuesday on Tuesday. But thanks so much for your time, and it's been great talking with you.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Yep. Jim Walsh from Nahant with us here on MSONewsports.com.
You'll love the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, as they feature a menu to please everyone. Start your meal with your choice from a dozen delicious appetizers. There are also soups and fresh salads. Dinner selections include burgers, sirloin tips, chicken parmesan, chicken piccata, and then there's seafood, clams, haddock, salmon, lobsters, and fish tacos, plus a wide selection of sandwiches and wraps. Let the Bradford Tavern host your events or functions set in unique spaces. Open 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday. The Bradford Tavern, Route 133 Rowley, and Bradford Tavern.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and patio doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Check out live sporting events on MSO News Sports and exclusive interviews with co-players. When it comes to local news and sports, MSO News Sports keeps you connected to the big.
All righty. We are back live now with Josh Arnold, Bill Newell, and myself, Rick Moore. We're here. Maybe some reaction about the interview we just heard. I just want to mention the one thing that stood out to me, Josh, because actually, Bill, Josh and I were actually talking about this as you were interviewing Jim, and the fact that, you know, it's of Bernie and socialism, you know, and it's not socialism. To an extent, we have socialist programs in this country. But my point was that, hey, you know what? You can say what you want as a candidate, but you still got to get it through Congress. And then Jim mentioned that, you know, and he mentioned, so you might want to pick that up, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, it, no matter what you, as the president of the country, you can set the tone, the direction. You could be the big picture person, the vision, but everything, just about everything that you have to do requires the legislature to be on board with it. And you know, one of the mistakes that they talk about in Kennedy's era, if Kennedy had used Lyndon Johnson as the liaison with the Senate and the Congress, he'd have been a much more effective as a president. The rap then was that they send somebody that was younger. They didn't want to have somebody that was older. But Johnson certainly had knew where all the arms were that need to be twisted to get the legislation through. Kennedy would, President Kennedy, President Johnson been more actively involved in the legislative process?
Well, it's been a while, and Bill, you can jump in here at any time, but it's been a while since what Jim has mentioned has come to pass, and that is, okay, this is how I want to get programs through Congress as a candidate to say that. And that was his point, was that, and nobody's saying that, just saying this is my program and this is what we're going to do. Bill, go ahead, Joe.
They want to do it with executive order.
And that's
the way to legislate, that essentially they've given up on working with the other parties in Congress to get things done. You know, Reagan took criticism as president because his own party said, well, he gave in too much. But the reality was he understood the way it worked, and he said, hey, if I get 50% of what I'm asking for this time, next time I'll try to get 60%. But I'm not going to walk away with nothing at the expense of the 50% I could have had. And so he understood that there were deals to be made and how they were done. And it doesn't seem as though the last 20 years or so we've wanted to make the deals. You know, Socrates wrote democracy and its best comes from a contrast of opinions. And that's not the way it works now. It's everybody has to be in lockstep or your opinion doesn't count. And that doesn't work. And that's the paralysis that permeates Washington, no matter who's in power.
Yeah, you listen to the tone of Jim Walsh and you can see Democrats and Republicans can possibly work together in Massachusetts as they have on a number of different things. And you also, you know, back when Ronald Reagan's time, he had Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill from Massachusetts, and they, a couple of Irishmen, were willing to sit down and talk things over and you know, and try to make a few deals, as you were alluding to, Josh, and they did that. So, but times have changed. I mean, it's I think it's unfortunate, and obviously, if it stays the way it is, the two parties will not work together nationally, and that's in the House and the Senate, because it is completely partisan. I mean, really, it's just about 100% partisan.
It is, what I find interesting is I want to see where the Bernie movement goes. And I made the observation, 3.5 years ago when Trump was running for the first time, and I said on one of the radio shows, I said, you know what? Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump feed from the same trough. And I still think that's true. I think that even though they're on polar opposites of issues, they both represent the disenfranchised, or the people who feel like they're not part of their they've been left behind, whether it's the people in the Democratic Party or the people in the Republican Party or the people in neither party. And so it'll be interesting for me to see how the establishment of the Democratic Party deals with who the nominee is going to be, and how much gas is or fuel feeds this revolution within the Democratic Party. Nancy Pelosi has some competition, and some of the people who are supporters of Bernie Sanders are supporting people that are running against Nancy Pelosi. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
I think another thing too, Josh, to watch in tonight's debate is that, and I was trying to pick up out of Jim Walsh's tone is 4 years ago there was a Never Trump movement for sure within the Republican Party, and that didn't work. I think we're hearing about a Never Bernie movement in the Democratic Party, but I'm not quite sure how vocal they are about it. But they might become pretty vocal about it tonight.
Well, you know,
in light also of what Bernie said this week, where I guess it all stemmed from the 60 Minutes interview, which I did not see. I saw clips of it, but kind of praising Castro. That does not play well, apparently, in Florida, and people are already saying he's lost Florida. That's a tough state to lose if you want to win.
Yeah. Well, you know, when they were doing the Stop Trump movement 3.5 years ago, somebody quoted Richard Nixon, and I hate to quote Richard Nixon a lot, but he said, if you get into a – he gave some of these advice. If you get into a situation where it's a stop so-and-so movement, bet on the guy that they're trying to stop. He said the odds will be with the person that they're trying to stop. From a strictly betting or political analysis standpoint, historically that's the way it's worked out.
So Bloomberg is in the debate tonight. Is that correct, Bill?
He's in the debate tonight. He's not on the ballot Saturday in South Carolina.
Okay.
So, you know, the other thing that I think I touched on when talking to Tim Walsh is get your reaction to this, Josh, is that, you know, I scanned a few polls quickly. If you go on to Real Clear Politics and then polls, you can catch some polls. And, you know, I was thinking that, you know, we don't know how Super Tuesday plays out, obviously, but some of the polling would indicate that there's not a huge surge for Bernie. There is, but there isn't a huge surge that you saw in Nevada. Now, that could all change by Tuesday. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, you know, you only, a poll is only as a snapshot from a few days before, obviously. But if he stays within 25%, 30% in some of these states, there could be an outlier where he does better. You know, those aren't the big numbers that, you know, you might hope to be capitalizing on at this point, and the Stop Bernie movement may have a life, to be honest, which I totally agree with you, Josh. I didn't really think that would be possible, but I'm thinking it could be possible, you know, even though he has all of the energy in the party practically.
Yeah, he has certainly a good portion of energy, and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the media helped promote Trump 4 years ago because they thought he was the easiest one for Hillary Clinton to defeat. And I think that the media early on may have given the camera or the microphone to Bernie because it made for good advertising, and it made for, you know, made the stew look a little bit better. But now there's some backtracking, and they don't want to make the same mistake that they made 4 years ago with Trump.
Yeah, and I think there's some Republicans out there that's saying, oh, Bernie's the best one to run against. I wouldn't bet on that. I think the parallels between the Trump and Sanders are significant as far as energy and ability to grow an electorate. You know, Bernie does have that potential, I think.
Well, I don't know if you guys saw the big news this week, and maybe we're all off base here, but Clint Eastwood has put his money behind Bloomberg now, so this all could be moot.
That disappointed me. I thought that I didn't really always follow what Clint Eastwood did, but I just that surprised me. And I mean, different people sign. There were some. I think Costner was backing Buttigieg and some other folks, and you know, always interesting to see who's on whose side and how that plays out. But the Clint Eastwood thinking that Bloomberg would win was a surprise to me.
He's bringing his guy. I don't know, but that was big news.
Tuesday is what percentage is Michael Bloomberg gets, because he is spending so much money, millions and millions of dollars, all targeted for March 3rd, Super Tuesday, and he's going to get some votes, and that's going to pull, you know, that's going to keep those from somebody from running away, I think, at least on Super Tuesday. That's a strategy that nobody thought would work, but you know, he may not win it, but I think he keeps it going. That's my hunch as to what happens out of Super Tuesday, because he's spending all of this money. He'll get percentages out of California. He'll get percentages out of Texas. How much? I don't know, but he'll get a few.
When you say he'll keep it going, do you mean what do you mean by that? Do you mean that he'll keep it in a fight so that nobody is a clear runaway winner?
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah, that to me is the way it could be trending. Obviously, he gets pummeled again tonight, and I know maybe things change. But again, he's spending so much money that people are watching his ads in Texas, they're watching him in California, they're all over there watching him here in Massachusetts. You know, he'll get a percentage of votes out of Massachusetts that you wouldn't have thought he would get, you know, a few weeks ago.
right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Good talk, good show. Appreciate it, Bill.
Got a bunch of stuff coming up Thursday, too, Rick. Not all politics this time on Thursday, so always something different.
Do about the new law in Massachusetts, I believe. We'll also be having a special guest from, I think it's Topsfield Wicked Local. I'm not sure what the name of that paper is, but Wendell Waters is a blogger up there, and she has a podcast that I think we're going to talk with her about, and we may have another guest or two. And the Rotary deal in Gloucester is coming up, isn't it, Josh?
Yes, the Polar Plunge, the 10th annual Polar Plunge, in which they've raised, to date, over $800,000 to help eradicate polio. And
I think that'd be a great show.
Well, we'll talk about it. She's been pushing that for years. So, I don't know. You may have to. You guys may have twisted my arm. All right, Bill, before you have more work for me to do, I'm going to let you go. Okay. All right. Josh, thank you very much. Any final thoughts here?
No, we're good.
All right, then. On behalf of Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, Bill Newell, I'm Rick Moore, and this has been Connections on MSONewsSports.com.